Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo, episode number 35, recorded on November 29th, 2011. Tyler Romer.
TWiT Photo is brought to you by Ford, featuring available sync with My Ford Touch. Sync with My Ford Touch gets you to your destination with integrated turn-by-turn directions and directional arrows displayed on screen. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. It's time for TWiT Photo, the show I look forward to all week long because I just love meeting these amazing photographers and taking a look at their beautiful work. A great show for inspiring you to take more pictures and maybe how to take some pictures, but not exactly a help and how-to show, more of just an inspirational show. And I credit you with that. Catherine Hall, our host.
Thank you, Leo.
So nice to see you. Catherine is a great photographer in her own right. You can find out more about her at CatherineHall.net. And she brings in some of the best photographers ever. And every week on your site now, you're doing a photograph
of
the week. That's something we've learned from some of our guests.
Yes,
it's a great idea.
So this is a quick post-processing tip. This was actually, it doesn't look like it was too overcast, but it was.
You know, when we were in Tasmania, we never got good skies.
No.
It was just big clouds all the time.
Some of that.
Yeah. So how did you?
Well, I was just going to say clarity. Clarity and
Setting.
In Lightroom.
In Lightroom.
Does Photoshop have clarity as well? I believe it does. Anyway,
I've only
clarity
used it
slider,
in Lightroom.
And that,
yeah.
What that will do is it will adjust the midtones and not affect the highlights. And so you're not going to be clipping your image. You'll be adding more contrast, but without clipping.
Got it.
So, and a lot of times I'll use those for people that use Nix software, which I use a ton.
Is that how you got the sepia tone?
I got the sepia tone from that. And then also they have what they call tonal contrast filter. And I use that in a lot of my images to really bring out the details.
It's nice.
It's kind of like, it has a sort of similar effect to the tone mapping of HDR.
Right.
But without getting the ghosting and all the other stuff that comes
Yeah, you'd never look
HDR.
At this image, especially because it's in monochrome. And say there's an HDR shot, but we never got a decent sky. We were there for 2 weeks in Tasmania. It was beautiful, beautiful, but just overcast all the time. So you were able to really find
and then
that sky
there.
And
no people too. Did you get many shots of people when you were in Tasmania?
You did. You got some incredible shots. You stalked farmers and kids and stuff. No, and I was all landscape. I knew I was going to be taking a lot of landscape pictures.
So.
What fun
people.
That was.
That was a blast.
Go to CatherineHall.net. You can see her photo of the week, Requiem for a Fisherman, and she's got in there some tips on what to do to get those shots.
Settings. Yep.
Yeah.
So
that's beautiful. But I want to show you another beautiful image. Tyler Romer's front page image on his his website.
Isn't that gorgeous?
Oh, my goodness. Tyler Romer, welcome to a TWiT Photo.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to see you.
He's
obviously freezing death.
I know. So, Tyler, how cold is it in your house right now to be wearing that down jacket?
You know, it's less than 60.
Okay, so do they make heaters in Oregon, or are you just...
Yeah, they do.
He's an adventure photographer.
He's an adventure photographer.
He cannot get fat and happy. He has to stay cold and on edge.
That's right.
Do you have a fireplace in that nice house of yours?
No, I'm actually moving tomorrow into a new place. So.
Oh.
The heat will be a little better in that.
I hope so.
Hopefully
I like
have a fireplace there.
And you're, so I could tell you. I could tell one thing. You're a surfer.
Yep.
There's a nicely used surfboard right behind you.
Yeah, it's pretty dirty.
Is that how you started adventure photography?
No, I actually started adventure photography through skateboarding, and skateboarding just led me down this path of from that to snowboarding because it's so similar, and. That led to some other sports, which rock climbing, kiteboarding, all those things. And
I guess it's reasonable if you're going to be an adventure photographer, you have to be an adventurer yourself, or you won't be able to really get to the places where these things are happening.
That's what I think. You know, we talk to photojournalists, all these people, a huge part of photography is access.
Right.
So, you know, my question for you, Tyler, is how do you have to be an athlete in order to get these shots? Like, how athletic do you need to be? Is that a prerequisite?
I would say so. You know, I'm not as fit as a lot of these athletes. They're top of their game. You know, I could climb a little bit, but most of the time they're climbing up and doing some rigging because it's so steep. And then I yard up on some ropes. But, and there's, you know, some areas are easier than others to get to.
This looks pretty inaccessible, I got to say. And by the way, this is the front page of your website. This image is obviously the next image you took. He's going down those falls.
Yeah. That's a chick.
That's actually Christy Glissmeyer, and she's a pretty amazing kayaker.
It's illegal to do that, too. So tell us about this.
So this is out in the middle, if you can believe it or not. There, you drive in, and you're in the middle of a cow pasture area, and then you hike down into the state park, and supposedly the state park doesn't like people to be boating around there.
I can see why.
Either kayaking. Rumor has it that some of the local boys have gone off this waterfall with blow-up Keikos. yeah, but before this photo was taken, there was two other kayakers that went off, and there's really no telling how well they're doing from the other kayakers' perspective. So the first person that went off, which was Josh McEwen, he actually fully ejected out of his boat.
Wow.
By over rotating and hurt himself a little bit.
Oh dear.
But you know, that's the name of the game. It's a 55-foot waterfall.
It makes a dramatic picture, but what I love is it's almost monochrome except for the blue of the boat and the green of the water,
mm-hmm.
and the orange of the life vest. That little spot of color there is just, if you didn't have that, you wouldn't see her probably.
Yeah,
that's true. If she's in a green boat, this wouldn't pop.
So how are you scouting out where to go? I mean, obviously your positioning is pretty optimum in this particular situation, but how do you know? Hey, how did you pick where to go in this particular?
Did Christy bring you with her, or you knew you must have known they were going over?
Yeah, we all met. She's actually from Hood River. I'm living in Bend, Oregon right now. But they had to go in a certain area where it was all icy. And we actually ran into a local that lives there, and he was telling me where to shoot on that day. He's like, I shot from that area. You shouldn't shoot from it. Didn't turn out well. So he went down further. He could get down right by where the water comes out. And
this is perfect positioning.
I just wanted to stay in that spot. I just knew it was the right spot to be.
But you only get a few shots at it. I mean,
yeah.
that's
even in burst mode. I mean, I imagine this is a fairly quick descent.
Yeah.
So you got just the right shot. And there's so many things to say about this photograph. The composition, because of the rocks and the water, is incredible. You chose to put her close to the center, which sometimes people would say, oh, no, she's rule of thirds or the rule of the perfect, whatever they call it, the perfect mean. I can't remember what they call it. But
rule of thirds.
But then there's the mean, right? Anyway, you didn't. You centered her.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the image, the rocks sort of create that rule of third down low.
They do.
And that's why it works. You know, I try not to put the subject matter directly in the center. Sometimes I just do it on habit just because of the surrounding area.
This time it worked. This time it worked perfectly. Yeah. I mean, it also draws you in. And I think that's the other thing. You know, they often talk about with painting, how the eye moves around on the painting.
Yeah.
And this, you're really drawn into the image and you look around at it and the story is told very dramatically.
So, Tyler, you said that it's composition can't be taught. Explain what you mean by that, and how do you learn?
Well, I think it can be taught. I think it's more of a personal style on where you want to put your subject matter. I shoot a lot more of the environment and, you know, tend to put the people smaller because sometimes I'm just a little more into the environment that I'm around. And I've noticed that I do that more and more. And sometimes I try to fight it and shoot close up with the 70 to 200 and just to get different feel for some of the images. But, like this image is, it's just the surrounding environment.
This is amazing. Yeah.
So are you typically for the surrounding environment, are you typically using a wider lens like the 16 to 35 or are you getting farther back? What's your,
I tend to use the 16 to 35 and the 70 to 200 most, and I stay away from the mid range.
Either very wide or very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are the two, you know, I have to pack light sometimes to get in these areas. And those are the two lenses that I would bring. That and the fisheye, just because it's really small and gets that extra reach, too.
Well, I was going to ask you, you said you started with skating. So often with skaters, certainly video, they use this, you know, 8mm, really big fisheyes.
Yeah.
I would love some tips. My son's a skateboarder. I would love some tips on how to take skateboard pictures. What is the secret to getting great pictures of skateboarders?
Well, I think, you know, like looking at Trans World skateboarding back in the day, they were bringing out those strobes way early in the 90s, and they have big generators or battery packs hooked to, or they, a lot of the skateboard photographers use the sun packs and created that light just on the skateboarder. And a lot of sports, the snowboard industry got a hold of that. They started looking because they're so similar. And I would just say that most of the skateboarders, photographers, they're the ones who are the leaders in that.
A lot of light.
Yeah, a lot of light. And, you know, a lot the spots that they're going, it's generally illegal. So it's usually the photographer that's left there with all his equipment.
A lot of light and make it portable if you
they
can.
They just run out. They run away.
That Honda generator is going to be great.
Yeah. One-time use.
Wow.
So, I mean, what about you with lighting? When you're, how often are you using lights? What do you bring? How do you keep it light?
I try to keep, you know, it down to a minimum. But
there's some light. If there's some light in this one, this is an interesting picture.
Yeah, that was. I just shot that recently in Bryce Canyon.
Oh, Bryce is gorgeous. But, yeah. You know, most people in Bryce, they focus on the rock formations. I love how you focus on the stars and the light. Is that that somebody moving through there with a it's obviously a time lapse, but.
Yeah, I just grabbed my headlamp.
There's just ran around.
One of my friends, he was behind me shooting photos. He swore he saw some UFO that night, but I couldn't make it out.
It's you.
Yeah.
Love that. I love
that. So what are you carrying? What are we using here? On typical with when on an average shoot, how often do you bring lights and what do you typically bring?
Usually I just have a small setup of, you know, like a, well, it's not small. It's the 15-pound battery that I bring with just an Alien B. And sometimes I pack two Alien Bs. And, you know, I tend to stay away from the 580EX for off, you know, getting the photos off the camera just because I use the radio frequencies are the same with Pocket Wizards. And there's always misfires when you never want them. So, I've had, you know, pretty good luck with Alien Bs. They're pretty durable. I've dropped one in a puddle and the other night it was snowing on it and it completely shut down, but it still worked once I, you know, dried it off. So
you're carrying the Alien Bs with you when you're like, how often are you carrying these, the studio sort of setup?
Generally, when I know I'm going to be limited with light, I bring those out. Sometimes at nighttime, I like to bring that out, you know, with that tube image with the biker.
Let's go back to that, yeah.
Yeah, that one's amazing. Let's take
it. It's really a gorgeous. I want to go to this shot then. But this is
this shot's just
so tell
gorgeous.
Us how you lit this.
So there was right behind the tube, I had the strobe set up.
That's what's lighting the inside of the tube there?
Yeah. And the moon was giving a little bit of light. You can see it in the upper right-hand corner.
Oh, yeah.
And this was just on the side of the highway. Basically, well, my friend just called me up, said it was 30 miles from town and we should go check it out. And we had to clean it out because it was completely filthy. It was dirty inside. And so I just set up the strobe behind there with a pocket wizard, and it was really cold. It was probably 20 degrees. And I actually forgot my tripod there, so I had to use a light stand to hook in. And that was probably about a 40-second exposure. And you see those red and yellow streaks. That was some semis going by.
So you didn't trigger the flash to get the cyclist in a moment, but you've got the camera open for 40 seconds. He moves, flash it, and then so that's a kind of it's almost a double exposure in a sense because you have a time exposure and you have a quick picture. I love that. That's awesome.
And it completely blinds the bikers, so they're screaming.
Oh no, that's horrible.
Yeah, because it's black, it's pitch black, and all of a sudden, boom.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, did you know, though? I mean, did you have a sense of what this was going to look like? You must have gasped when you saw it. I mean, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, just generally, you know, I think I only took 15 photos that night, and is one of my favorite photos.
It's amazing.
The colors. So were you using a blue gel on your strobe, or what was creating that blue cast?
No, that was just the inside. It's just really, like, metal, and I think I might have brought down the temperature and made it a little more cool. Just, I don't know, instead of bringing up the warmness on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what created that blue.
Mm-hmm. It's plenty warm with the light. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be blue from the moonlight anyway. So I take it that the tires and everything in front, that's moonlight.
Yeah, that's moonlight, and that's actually snow on those tires.
Oh, my gosh.
It was so cold.
So what about, like, so you're dealing with, you have the 5D Mark II, and so with that shutter, you have is it 1/80th of a second? You can't go faster than that typically with the strobe. How are you dealing with capturing action with not being able to shoot faster than 1/80th of a second?
Because he's obviously moving. Well, he's trucking.
I think it's like 1/200th of a second with that. So basically, you know, it becomes like math equations with the flash durations. And I think that's important when, if you study the flash durations, each flash has a different output and it gets technical and it, you know, so it throws out that light for 1/2000th of a second or so on, or less than that.
But the calculation is, you know how short it's going to be, but you have to know how much light you're going to get so that the exposure is appropriate.
Right. Give us an example of that, how you would calculate that out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's high-end math, dude. I know.
Well, you were telling me yesterday, like, one of the things that you do, for example, if you know that you only need to light half the frame, if you want to elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good example. You don't want light anywhere but that inside of that tube and this bike guy.
Exactly.
Right.
So the way the shutter works, it's the light is hitting it coming down. And if you do, depending on what your camera is and how fast it syncs, so say it syncs at 1/200th of a second, and then you bump it up to 1/400th or 1/320th of a second, then it will only show that much light on the upper part and then the rest be dark. So if you have an image in the upper right-hand corner that you want to light, say the biker's up there, and you don't really necessarily care about lighting the rest of the subject, that's probably the way to go.
Take advantage of the curtain.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
One of these days, Canon's going to get rid of that, I think, you know.
They probably see it as a technical flaw, and you see it as an advantage, something you can use.
Some medium format cameras can sync 1/8,000th of a second. That's
what you need.
That's amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
So are you doing test shots, basically saying, hey, okay, if I'm at this setting, I see that my strobe's hitting this much of the image and kind of getting it set up that way.
Right.
Got it.
And then just predicting where they're going to go and setting up. That's why I do like to have a tripod set up for some shots where I know they're going to end up being, you know.
You compose it in your head because the composition in all of these shots is amazing.
Yeah. Really,
but this is a good example. You wanted to get, obviously, for composition reasons, you got to get that snowboarder right there.
Right.
And
right.
So you set up and you just have to shoot it right at the right time, I guess.
Yep. I think I was shooting that was 2009, and I was shooting on the 1D Mark II on that one. So that one blasts out the frame. So it was,
you could do a bunch of, so you would do the burst mode and just all the way across. Yeah.
So speaking of a tripod, how has a tripod almost killed you? This is not a joke. Tell your mom to put on earmuffs.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to hear this one.
So, you know, it's always, you got to get to some precarious situations sometimes. And especially at the hometown crag here at Smith Rock, there's some areas that are a tight squeeze, or it's, there's a slab to a 300-foot fall. And sometimes, you know, I have a big low pro backpack with a tripod sticking out, and you know, if you're ducking under things and not prepared for that jolt, then it could definitely throw off your balance, and that's something that you don't want to do, you know. But I've also been on bike rides where I've had a light stand sticking out and tried to duck under trees, and it completely shattered.
Oof.
Oh, jeez.
Oof. Look at this shot. Wow.
Yeah.
So, Tyler, because
where's
of that,
he going to land?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we just went there to do some cross-country shots, and that's my good friend Jamie Goldman, and he's just a pro biker, and he's like, I think I could jump this.
Oh, my God.
Be my guest.
Yeah, you know. And I'll be standing right here.
I'll just be right over here with my tripod.
I just love these shots.
I think he blew up his tires several times that day.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's just
great. You must
have
a lot of friends. You'd be a good friend to have.
Look at this. This is gorgeous.
Every athlete wants great photos of them.
Yeah.
I want to ask you that, actually. One of the things you mentioned yesterday is that a lot of times you'll get feedback from the athletes. Explain how that process works and how you feel it can help you create better imagery.
So I always show the athlete the images afterwards, especially if they're pro athletes, so they get their take on it. Because there's a lot of athletes that, you know, they're just particular about the way they're presented. And, you know, you got to be really selective and edit down and for the movement of, you know, you wouldn't want to shoot that skier, for instance, you know, a millisecond later, you know, or after, and then it just wouldn't be the right movement.
Right.
So, and
this is dramatic.
The thing that's great about that too is for getting repeat business. If you're getting the athlete exactly the way they want to be seen, then they're more likely to hire you or want you to request you for editorial shoots in the future.
That and don't make them look ugly.
there is a theme though to your shots of humans dwarfed by nature, or you know, the gigantic nature and the small human. This is a perfect example. I mean, you've got the mountain in the distance, the cloud banks, and the skier, and it just looks like
snow spray and
a composite.
Like,
you know, I mean, it's incredible. Just incredible shot. Yeah, the snow spray. I don't know if people can see that, but
the snow spray is part of the best part.
It is.
It makes it Because you're right. It feels unreal.
And then that's the reality of it.
And then it brings it back to that reality.
That's a jump.
Yeah, believe that or not, that's, you know, early summer up on Mount Hood. And they just have, you know, they're up on that glacier and they just build jumps and... That's where all the pro skiers go.
Do you want to be doing this, the skiing part, the skating part, the biking part? Do you say, oh, I wish I were out there? Or are you content to stand back and get these amazing... I mean, anybody would just die to get these pictures. But do you feel like I wish I were doing the action?
Sometimes I do when, you know, when there's a good pillow of snow.
Powder.
Yeah.
That's kind of hard.
You know... Everybody that skis knows that feeling is very like anxious. You just want to go thrash it. And it is hard, but you know, it's, I just see it as there's so many times that I don't remember that I've gone up to the mountain that have been good skiing. And I'd rather remember it through a photo.
Boy, I mean, these photos are eternal and it's stunning. Yeah. This is a perfect moment. You know, you just, it's that moment.
Well, going with that, the moment and the gesture and capturing the athlete, like you said, if you're a millisecond later, it wouldn't be the right. How, obviously with the sports that you know, you're going to be at an advantage.
My dog is concurring.
But what about sports that, like you've shot equestrian, for example, and I assume that you didn't grow up like riding horses.
Right.
How do you learn, how can people learn how to shoot sports that they may not be familiar with?
I would say interact with the athletes themselves and get their take on it. You know, that's, they want to be just shown, like I said, in a good light. And you know, there's certain parts with, you know, equestrian, for example, it's, they just want that perfect moment where the horse is, you know, just about to take off and the legs are just right and body position on the horse is perfect. So
yeah, it's interesting because you have a couple of constituencies. A shot like this, the surfer wants to look good, but you're also trying to make a great shot and you want to get the wave, the curl, the look, the colors.
Well, he's really telling a story.
You're telling a story. So sure, you've got to make the athlete look good, but it's so much more than that. To make a great shot.
Yeah, how do you balance that? That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Well, that's what makes you good.
Yeah,
There's a lot of throwouts, you know, as every photographer, you know, there's the photos that you don't show everybody. And,
right.
The metering, there's always, I always do at least 10 shots of metering to get the exposure right and to find the highlights and the dark tones and what I want to meter on.
Yeah, because you're not going to get another shot in some of these cases. This is it.
Right. Like that kayaker back there, that was a one-time deal. It was
going down the waterfall.
Yeah, the powder skier, once they go down, they can get back up, but the powder's,
it's going to be a lot later, yeah.
The tracks are there. It's over.
Yeah. I love this skateboard shot. This is an example. I'm going to go back to it here. You were talking about lighting. Tell us about how you lit, especially this... the guy in the leaves.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
The lighting is very interesting here.
So I had two strobes going there, one to the left, and it's hitting him.
Yep.
On there, and then one on the back, and you could see it, the highlights.
Yep, on his butt.
It was a little, little exposed, overexposed on that, just to make him pop a little more. And I actually used a tilt shift on that lens. So I
really? Oh, that's interesting.
I tilted it a little bit. And that's what makes that tree look a little bizarre on the left.
But it's so three-dimensional. I mean, it almost looks like a pop-out book because he really, you did that with both the tilt shift and the lighting outlining him. He really is coming out of that picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dramatic.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Yep. I did a good job, he says.
Yeah.
We're talking, I am just loving this, to adventure photographer extraordinaire. Tyler Romer, and Tyler Romer's website is Tyler Romer, ROEMER.com. Go look at that amazing picture. Amazing pictures right there on the page. Some very dramatic stuff. We're going to talk more in just a little bit. We'll get your tips, Tyler, and we'll take a favorite shot of yours, take a look at that, and some equipment picks, too. Yeah. We always like talking about gear. Before we do, though, I'd like to talk about Ford Motor Company, Ford.com/technology. I just was corresponding with Scott Monty over at Ford saying, Scott, I want that 2012 electric Focus. You got to get me on that list there. I'm very excited. Of course, one of the reasons is I have a 2010 Mustang with Sync, but now the Sync with my Ford Touch goes to the next level there. You've got the big screen in the center console, but also two little screens behind the steering wheel. The whole idea of all of the technology in Ford's vehicles, of course, is to connect you to the world, to give you a chance to do all those things you like to do, but without compromising safety. Your hands stare on the wheel, your eyes on the road, you're at 10 and 2, but your thumb there, you press that button, and you can, of course, play any song. You can have tweets read to you. You can listen to Stitcher or Slacker Radio. You can listen to Pandora, all of this stuff with my Ford Touch and Sync. But I always forget to remind you that this is the best GPS ever. Those little screens behind the steering wheel tell you left or right. They got a database of 40 million businesses in the GPS. 40 million. That means you can say, you know, take me to the Twit Brick House. It'll not only know where it is, it'll have the phone number. You can call ahead. All of this, again, without taking your hands off the wheel or the eyes off the road. The engines, the EcoBoost, the electric, the hybrid, the plug-in hybrids, state-of-the-art gear, things like the Bliss cross-traffic alert, monitors your blind spots, the active park assist. These are 21st century vehicles. They're beautifully made, beautifully engineered, state of the art. And I want you to take a look at it all at Ford.com/technology. And don't forget to visit your Ford dealer and drive one today.
I like the Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah, isn't that cool? It just goes on and on. There's little things, too, like the capless fuel filler.
You could send in your images on assignment.
What do you mean?
Like you're shooting.
Oh, you're driving along and you
send in your images.
That's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
Yep.
Isn't that cool?
Pretty cool. And you said there's the cooler and something.
Like, there's the what?
Just saying,
cooler. The Flex. The Flex has a cooler. It's actually a dual. It's an ice box.
Tyler,
that could be hot or cold.
You need a cooler.
Every photographer should be driving a Ford Flex, I think. Or maybe the Edge, which is pretty too, I don't know. There's so many good choices. Ford.com/technology. Give it a try today. We are big fans of Ford.
So I should tell you why. The reason I said Tyler needs a cooler. So this goes back to gear. I'm going to pull this up.
I can read
this quote from him because I think it's hilarious. I said, right now I have in my bag a 5D Mark III. 5D.
Mark 3, Mark 2.
Mark, oh, it says 3, I don't know why.
You don't have a Mark 3, do you?
That doesn't happen.
Yeah,
do you?
Now.
Tyler, you're getting my hopes up. Like, what?
Maybe it's not coming in January.
Okay, Mark 2.
Mark 2, 51-2, 16-35L, 24-70L, 70-200L.
Wow.
45mm tilt shift, 15mm fisheye, model releases, headlamp, lots of pocket wizards, flashes, energy bars, and most likely a two-week-old crusty sandwich.
Don't eat the sandwich. My advice, just, you know, a little tip.
I had to throw that out there. I was dying of laughter.
Tell me about that 45 tilt shift. That I've always been interested by this lens, but it's a special occasion lens, or do you use it a lot?
I actually haven't picked it up in the last couple months, which I've been meaning to do. You know, I had every intent of using it.
It's a very expensive lens.
It is. And it's manual focus, and that's what I do like about it. And it just sort of brings me back. And, you know, you can get it's super sharp. That's what I love about it. And you could use it as a prime, too, a 45 prime.
So the idea is, it's f2.8. The idea is you see these little screws on the side. You just, it's kind of like a lens baby.
Sale.
You tilt. Is it on sale for only $2,000?
Yeah, it's never on
sale. Oh, $1,100. Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Nah, you're tempting me. No, see, I think I wouldn't use it that often. So you can change the focal point.
You have to get good at it, too, because it can look bad if you're not doing it correctly.
Well, let me go back to this shot, because you used it for this shot. So that tree, which is roughly, is not so far out of focus.
Right.
Really, but because of the tilt shift, you've centered the focus on the skater and pulled the tree out of focus, even though it's roughly the same plane.
Yeah, how are you... I mean, that's hard, focusing on action, right, with the tilt shift? Like, how did you master that?
I ended up... that was... I think I focused on the leaves right there.
Right.
So there was...
And then when the skater came in his shot, you just said, freeze, hold it right there.
Yeah.
Don't move.
I'll give you a sandwich.
But that's where being a skater helps, because you can kind of it must have helped you a little bit knowing that where he's going to be and what that or you're just extremely lucky.
Yeah, I mean, that's just knowing what he's going to do.
Yeah, you knew exactly where he was going to be.
Well, because you can't burst with strobe.
That's a good point.
You know, so there's kinda,
that's
you
not
have to
that's
nail
one
the shot.
Shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many times did he do that?
Oh, I had to say he probably did it 15 times.
Okay.
Oh, that's not that many. Okay.
Yeah.
You can only do it so many times before the leaves start to look beat up.
Or before he starts to not do it just quite as well.
I just love it. He's just, it's perfect. Now, do you, how much Photoshop, how much retouching do you do? What do you do in there? Do you, first of all, Lightroom?
Yes, I use Lightroom. I'm in Lightroom too. I haven't upgraded to 3 yet. Lightroom just hasn't sold me on 3.
Okay.
I haven't checked it out recently, but I'll probably upgrade when 4 comes out.
Right.
But basically, you know, just minor corrections, contrast, and color. You know, when you're shooting RAW, it looks sort of bland sometimes. So
right.
You gotta make those colors come out again. And yep, just general stuff like that.
You shoot a lot of snow. Do you do anything to the snow?
Snow, when you shoot snow, it always underexposes it, so the snow always comes out
gray.
Really gray and blah. So
right.
In the camera a lot, I push it at least one stop, if not more, and that gives a little more contrast to the skiers sometimes.
Yeah.
So you're primarily just doing general global adjustments. Like, how much time per an image are you on spinning in Lightroom? On average.
I would say maybe 15 minutes, depending on the image. You know, sometimes I like to go in and dodge and burn some certain areas.
Those regional corrections, really, that was a big jump when Lightroom started doing that.
Yeah.
That really was a big jump.
It was.
That was in
that's
2. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I love about Lightroom.
So this is a good example. And the snow is perfect in this. It's just perfect. It's so white and clean and just right.
Yeah.
Just like you like it, Leo?
Yeah, that's how I like
it. Super. It was sort of soft light there, too. You know, it wasn't harsh. The sun was down lower. And there's just the shadows sort of blend in. And I don't know. Sort of made this. The snow sort of looks dreamy in that.
It is. But it's a very tough exposure because you've got these. You've got detail in these rocks, which is not easy.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you wanted a silhouette of the photographer or whatever, whoever that is on the peak there.
Right.
And then the snow is perfect.
I love how the photographer sort of mimics a rock shape.
Yeah, isn't that great?
You don't even notice it right away.
Yeah, it's so great.
So you weren't formally trained, and you actually were considering Brooks, but you decided not to go that route. Why not? And are you happy about that decision?
I'm happy about it. Whatever you did, that was the right thing to do.
I've had a couple friends that have gone to Brooks, and I'm all for education. I think it's great. I was going to go there, but, you know, the last minute I was just decided that living in Santa Barbara and coming out, you know, $100,000 in debt from school, that it wasn't for me. And I would rather invest that $100,000 into equipment and travel and
smart,
you know, but, you know, I got my degree through OSU here and I totally loved every minute of it, and I'm glad that I did it.
What did you study at OSU? Photography?
No, actually, I took a lot of photography classes through high school and in college. And once I just got the normal, those classes down, when I entered school, I got my bachelor's degree in outdoor tourism recreation.
Oh, fun.
So, and that helped me out a lot because there's a lot of business classes you're supposed to come out, you know. Being able to run a business and in the rec world.
But you initially thought photography wasn't, or art in general, wasn't a viable option. So how did you sort of transition into making this a career?
Well, I started, you know, I've just always loved photography and I just did it as a hobby. And then I started helping out this photographer, Ben Moon. And one thing led to another. Just saw the potential in the outdoor world and what you can do. And he just told me, you know, it's just time for me to work on my own. And, you know, it was a good time for me to do that. So
apprenticeship is a good idea, I think, in some ways. Yeah.
I think it's for everyone to have different paths. From your apprenticeship, what would you say was the most valuable lesson that you learned?
That it's a business, and if you succeed, that there's a lot of computer crunch time that you have to do, and it's not always being out in the field shooting, which I wish it was, but there's a lot of editing, there's a lot of web design. You got to be your own, you know, until you get to that stage where you could hire people. You have to be your own PR person, all these things that it's internal in a company that a lot of people don't think about. So you have to be a multitasker too.
We should point out that Tyler sometimes takes pictures of people, and your people pictures are great. I mean, close up of people.
I know.
They're great also. I love them.
This personality is personality really this, comes.
Yes. Really like
through.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. That was just when we're out, you know, we're hiking the PCT and we're really crusty. We just got done swimming and catching crawdads, and he just went for it.
Love it. Love it. So fun. So fun. Look at this. Oh.
Yeah, that's in Nevada in an Aspen Grove, and that the flame down low was super. It was like coals, and just lit very slightly, and
just 20 seconds, half a minute. What is
that? Was I think it was like 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. That one
just gorgeous.
So, speaking of Nevada, Tyler, there's some risk involved with your job. Want to share? Want to share your recent experience in Nevada?
Yeah, Nevada Wilderness Project will hate me for this, but what was it? It must have been a year ago. Just out in the field, they hired me to shoot some areas they're trying to protect, and we're out shooting, and I got done shooting and came back into the car, and there was a dog there, and just sat down by it, and it turned and just chomped down on my nose.
Oh, ow.
And, left a good scar.
Ow.
And, you know.
You wouldn't think with all of the risky things you've done that it was a dog bite that would get you in the end.
Right.
Well, your other recent encounter, too, you're being stung?
Bee stings?
Yeah.
No, I got stung by a scorpion. And that was by the most venomous, is what the doctor said. And he was super nonchalant about it when I went to the doctor, which was like 2.5 hours from where we were camping.
Yeah, it was nighttime. Let's set the stage here. Yeah. They've been shooting all day. It's night. They're 2.5 hours away from the hospital. He's in his tent. He's ready to relax. He feels something. He thinks it's a spider.
I just felt a sting. I turned my headlamp on, and I saw this, you know, I looked around for a minute, and then I saw this spider. So I thought, you know, spider bit me. And I have no clue what the wildlife is out there, so I'm assuming that, you know, I just played it off for a minute, but I start to feel the venom creep on my arm.
No.
And just throughout my body, and it was like, it was electrical shocks, basically. So
Leo's going to stay in the studio.
The next 24 hours, I was pretty hard up.
Yikes. Well, I'm glad you survived that one.
Yeah.
Just tell your mom you're bust again.
Yeah, really. Don't listen, Mom. Here's a shot of a bicyclist with a shovel.
Yep. That's my friend Jamie again. He digs his own jumps, and this is in his backyard.
He digs his own jumps.
So he has 5 acres of land, and it's like a playground.
Isn't that great? Look at this one. He's just flipped over completely. This is crazy. You know, I like, you know what's interesting about this shot is it's so much better because you got the guy sitting on the rock watching. I've seen you do this a couple of times in your shots. Obviously, you can't plan that. You can't tell the guy, stay there.
Or do you?
He was pretty far away. I mean, I didn't want to, you know, impose and tell him to stand there. But I like that just because he's, you know, the guy up on the rocks just so relaxed, just looking at him while the other guy's just intense, dangling from nowhere.
Just great shots. We saw that one.
So you're working, you say you work a lot with friends. How often are you using models, friends? Are they real athletes? Are they, you know, what's the proportion?
Yeah. I would say that one quarter is pro athletes that I work with, and the other is
crazy people.
Yeah.
You know, that's the pro athletes. That's covered in the pro athletes section.
Right, right. And the rest are, you know, just my friends who I've made along the way, and they just want to go out and shoot a certain subject, and I'm happy to do that.
Oh, it's amazing. Look at this shot.
What about as far as, like, the bread and butter? When it comes to making a living, who are your subjects typically? Is it mostly pro athletes?
Yeah, mostly pro athletes, or if a company comes at me and they want to schedule a day shoot, then I line up models. That's my bread and butter.
And then how are you reaching that audience? So, like, say Patagonia, or, you know, looking at your jacket. So these outdoor companies, how can they find you?
Well, it's more of a matter of me finding them and talking to the right people and talking with photo editors, and, you know, and it's a lot of, for in the editorial world, it's a lot of waiting, you know, but you just have to get your pigeons in line, and, you know, it's, and just be set on them taking their time and paying you at will. On, you know, that's just the editorial world.
How much of this is editorial? How much of this is advertising? How much of this is just for you? I mean, these shots we're looking at are just, National Geographic quality. They could be editorial. Well, of course.
There you go.
I would, you know, I always like to take pictures that I'm just excited about. Oh. And that's, you know, I feel like, you know, a photo editor that I used to work with, he always told me that if you're excited about a picture, then it's pretty sure that the majority of people will be too.
Right.
And
I just,
a good word them.
So do you shoot stock or spec stuff, or is, I mean,
I do stock. I do. I work with Lonely Planet.
Mm-hmm.
And
perfect.
They're my stock agency. Yeah. So
this, I love your composition. I love your sense of lighting and color. This is a great example. The story, everyone is a story.
I love the story.
You've chosen a great, medium and subject matter for your eye, because every one of these is a story. I mean, this is incredible. Look at this.
Yeah, this is in Thailand this past winter, and just my friend Tig right there, just doing what he does.
He's going up, not down. By the way, I should point out, this is.
I have a question. I know. Tyler, how much, going off what you said, Leo, how much are you doing on spec, where you're just inspired, you're going out with your buddies, you're shooting stuff? How often are you actually able to profit from that monetarily?
Those tend to be the more profitable images that come about, that I'm not planning on, you know, anything coming about them, and just something happens where the lighting just pops out just right. And
you saw these wildflowers, and you just said, I have to get this shot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Just gorgeous.
And then where are you typically selling them?
Stock or editorial, like this one might be good for bike magazine, mm-hmm, or something, mm-hmm, like that. Yeah. Or, you know, if they want to do a feature on a certain trail, because this trail's up on Mount St. Helens, that would be a good place for it, you know.
Gotcha.
There's always places for photos to go, and you just got to find the right puzzle piece to fit them in.
I think it probably helps that you also have a reputation. And so I would imagine at this point, word of mouth is really important to your business.
Right.
People know you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I have a hard time talking about myself a lot. And so that's why I surround myself with a lot of people who do.
Let them do it.
You know, the loud, loud mouth. So.
With all the athletes. You got to get this guy. He's great.
Yeah. So this is like a lot of people's dream job.
No kidding.
You know, to go out and shoot this stuff.
But I tell you, if I had his talent.
Besides being bitten in the face by dogs and stung by scorpions.
Well, at least some negatives.
You have talked about how there's definitely been a lot of really high moments and some low moments. Can you explain sort of, you say you're really transparent, so I'm going deep here. What's been like the lowest low and how did you get out of it?
It's just, you know, when I can't really recall like the lowest
low. Is it hardest when you're starting out?
I think that, you know, the constant, yes, when you're starting out and, you know, you send your photos out to ABC editors and they turn around and be like, that's great, but the photos don't work. Mm. And, you know, but I think that you got to, in a way, you have to separate yourself from the business aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And
that's got to be hard because you're an artist.
And try not to take it personal.
Right.
And that's a big issue for a lot of people that that are artists, you know.
Yeah.
And I try to listen to people's critiques, you know. Especially when I'm shooting female, you know, like female subjects, because they tend to like certain things that maybe, you know, if you just wouldn't shoot them the same way as a guy would, you know. You want to show their cheekbone and you want to, you know, there's certain lighting that you would want to do. But
see, a guy doesn't care that you take this picture of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He says, that's good.
Grinning it out.
Female where her chin's pushed in and wrinkled and all right. that. They might be. Right. That's kind of it.
That's manly.
That's manly. Right. That's manly. Even though he's wearing slippers, that's manly.
Right. What would be like the three differentiating factors when shooting a female versus male?
Ooh. I would say shoot from above.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use a wide angle up close on them.
Makes the nose too big.
Right.
No one wants big arms. Female are very sensitive about their arms.
I think we're being very sexist here. Look at this. You shot from above. It is a wide angle, but you're far enough away. And her arms look great.
See, this is wide angle to her advantage. Right. She's in the center. So then it's okay.
Right.
So bad. This guy doesn't care. This is that's a great shot. Love it.
Right. He didn't.
I love how you're protecting women and I'm the one that's
just pointed at my camera and he just put that cigarette, that banana leaf cigarette in his mouth and it was that photo.
You like to, this is Thailand again, I think, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that your favorite place to go?
So far I really like Japan. Japan was great.
Mm-hmm.
Guam was great. Guam's just great because it's so weird and it's part of the experience of traveling and meeting new cultures and just learning, getting out of your bubble.
Mm-hmm. Was this shot an assignment or did you just had an idea and said, let's try this?
That's really cool. I like that shot.
This was just, this summer, my friend and I were just out fishing and
you said, I have an extra Mark II body. Let's try submerging it.
Let's just put it in the water. Which could actually segue into our tips.
Let's do it when we come back.
Yeah.
But are you in a plastic bag? How are you taking this picture?
Leo needs to know.
That is a water housing that I have.
It's a water housing. Okay.
Yeah.
How often are you using a water housing?
Not too often.
How often should you be, and are you not?
Well, if you're gonna do this, you should be using a water housing, I think.
That's a good question. I mean, I've drowned cameras before in my backpack. So
you saw that picture of the.
Are you using the standard water housing? Are you
the
using
standard
the ones,
Canon?
The ones that can fit on various lenses and bodies.
I go.
Tyler Stableford recommended that one.
Right.
I go directly through. I believe it's NSP. So directly through the manufacturer and then you just tell them what lens port you want and they fix it up for you. Send it. It's a little cheaper. So cheaper's better.
We're going to take a little break when we come back. Yes, Tyler's tips. And we have another gear recommendation as well. We're talking to Tyler Romer, tylerromer.com. Amazing photography and a great website. You didn't? Did you do this yourself now, or did you? Are you big time now, and you can hire people to do it?
I actually went through a photo folio for that website.
Beautiful.
Who I just met, one of the creators. I just sat down with him the other day. Just really randomly met him.
It's really well done.
So. I love it that you put big pictures on here. So many photographers are reluctant to put big images on their website. They're afraid people will steal them or whatever. But you really can enjoy the website when you see these full screen images. They're just dramatic as hell.
Is your site scaling?
Yeah, it goes off flash, so it sort of brings it back when you zoom in and all that. So
it's very nice.
That's great.
More to come in just a moment. First, I want to remind everybody, and we'll do this quickly because I want to get to these tips about Netflix, netflix.com/twit. If you're not yet a Netflix streaming subscriber, why the heck aren't you? Thousands of movies, TV shows, entertainment at your fingertips, plays on all your computers, your iPad, all your Android tablets, your Xbox 360, your PlayStation 3, your Nintendo Wii, most Blu-ray players, many TVs. Now, it's the gold standard. If you don't have Netflix built into your device, you're missing out on all the wonderful streaming available, which means you should be subscribing. $7.99 a month for all this great stuff. I no longer get the DVDs. I just because I know there's always something to watch. Phineas and Ferb for the kids. 30 Rock for the family, having a fun time laughing. Classics, documentaries. In fact, I love the documentaries. Really a great chance to see stuff that, I never saw in the theaters. You'd never see in the theaters. Lots of foreign films as well. Just try it out. If you're not a member yet, netflix.com/twit will get you 30 days free. If you are, tell a friend. Let them know. Netflix.
Sign up for Grandma for Christmas.
Sign up to, you know what? It is a really good, that's what I gave my mom. I bought her, this was back when it was still DVD only, I bought her a Netflix subscription for a year. It's a great gift. And then I also bought her a TV with a DVD player in it because she didn't have one.
Yeah.
That was years ago. I think it was last year, she said, oh, honey, you don't have to get me the DVDs anymore. I just watch Netflix streaming all the time. Okay, $7.99 a month is a good deal. They do it. They have gift certificates. They'll send a card out and everything. Netflix.com/twit. Give them a try. Today, let's get to Tyler's tips. I have them here on in convenient slide form. Let me see. Tip number one: trash your gear. What?
I think that's my favorite tip that we've.
What? What do you mean by that?
Trash your brand new 85.2. Do it, Leo.
No. Is this an example of gear trashing in progress here on this shot?
Yeah, this is basically the sequence of events right here.
The skier goes by.
You have to get close to get the shot sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, and then disaster strikes. So I'm not saying, like, go out intentionally, destroy your gear.
Excuse me.
It's more...
Make me cold just looking at it.
Yeah. It's more just... it's using your gear and not staying at home and shining it. Mm-hmm. And not being afraid to, like, use it. It's okay to get a couple water drops on your camera. I've gotten my camera completely soaked and it works fine. That will bring you to certain areas where, see there.
Leo's having a hard time
painful.
With this one. Actually, you can always tell a pro from an amateur.
Your pros do this.
By looking at their gear.
Yeah, it's
like
true.
If you look at my gear, it's like all banged
up.
Like nothing looks nice. It's all, because you forget
it's a tool.
About it.
It's a tool for you guys.
Yeah.
For me, it's my precious.
But I think the point is my precious. But I think the point that Tyler's making that's so true is you think you have to take, such great care of it. But I beat my stuff up and it just keeps working.
Right.
It's made for that, especially when you get the L series and all, the stuff that's sealed very well and all that.
Is that why you buy L series lenses, Tyler?
Yeah, they're sealed and they're ready to go.
Yeah.
I've owned some of the gold stripe lenses and, I'm afraid that I'm just going to break them. So
now that the 1D is full frame, I bet you a lot of pros will go to 1D because those bodies are more rugged than the 5D bodies.
They're heavier.
They're huge, yeah.
That's my resistance.
The 1DX is pretty nice.
Yeah, it is a nice camera.
They tricked it out.
Yeah. Know the game. Tip number two. What game is that?
I think we spoke on this a little bit. It's just knowing the sport, knowing the movement on where to be.
Yeah.
We saw this photo
perfect
already.
Perfect example, yep.
So body position on the left skater. He's doing a 5-0 grind. And just know what they're going to do and what the crux of the situation is, you know, what the height.
Yeah, you got down low so that he'd be right in the middle there.
Right.
Because you wanted that sky.
Exactly.
How much, especially with sports that you may not know as much as you do skateboarding, how much are you talking with athletes and what are the questions you're asking them in order to get that moment?
A lot of the times there's some disconnect to what they're going to do because sometimes they just throw a trick off of nowhere, you know, like some backflip or whatnot, just because they, you know, once they charge into a jump or something that. But, you know, skateboarding's easier because, you know, they're like, well, I'm going to do a 5-0 grind. And if you know what that trick is, then you know where their body position is going to be.
Right.
And miss it by a second, then it just doesn't look as good.
So then how are you editing that? That's my other question. Because, you know, if you don't know the sport, how do you edit? How do you know what that second is?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I would say there's some good photos that I throw out that are still good. And, you know, nobody could tell the difference if you're not doing that sport. But if you do that sport, even the basic hand movement can throw off the photo for some people that know the sport. So that's why there's a lot of throwaways in outdoor.
That's interesting. So you could take a picture that you think artistically is fine, but you know that the people who know that sport will say, oh, no, that's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Yep.
Is that what? That's another reason to show the athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get the feedback.
Interesting. I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought, hey, it's a good picture. Who cares if it reflects the sport? But no,
who
that's not in your business. You got to care.
Bent the wrong the wrong direction.
And finally, tip three, don't be this guy.
Yeah.
Is that after the dog bit you?
Yeah, that's after the dog. My friend just snapped an iPhone photo.
Getting validation without dying.
Oh, Ozzy, you would never
best
do that.
Moment ever.
Yeah, but you're still smiling. And this one, somebody in the chat room said, Tyler is always smiling. And then somebody responded,
still smiling.
You
that's
would
very true.
Smile if you had his job.
Yeah, life's pretty good.
Actually, that wasn't tip three. This is tip three, and you better explain this. 5.6.
I like how big it is. It's just like, bam, 5.6.
What is that?
I just like to shoot in 5.6. That's my fallback aperture.
Really? Why? Why 5.6?
It's good for sports because the person's always moving. They're either coming at you or beside you.
So you can never get, it's too hard, even with your, you love that 50mm 1.2, but you don't shoot at 1.2 because you'll never get anything in focus. They're
exactly.
moving too fast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's that plane of in focus that, you know, it's a little more lenient than
you still 1.2. Do you still get some depth of field with 5? I guess a little bit with 5.6.
Yeah, 5.6 gives you some depth of field.
Yeah.
So what about in situations where it's really low light and you're trying to freeze action? What will you do in that situation?
Then I'll probably dip down to 3.2, and because that's generally pretty sharp, and I focus on where I think they're going to be at that point, and just sit and wait instead of following them with a focus.
If you like Tyler's photography, he does sell fine art prints on his website. I think there's a lot of people who would love to have a 19 by 14 or larger print on their wall of some of this stuff. Just great, great stuff.
And he just started a Facebook page.
You did?
Yes.
Yep.
Awesome.
I told him
just
he needs
a month
to get
ago.
On Google Plus.
Is it Tyler Romer?
Yep.
All right.
Photography.
Tyler Romer Photography. Romerphoto. Gee, I'm spelling it.
Tyler, you're so
think
mellow.
You know how to spell like, photography.
This is kind of a random question, but you obviously have this kind of very mellow tone to you. But like, it takes so much aggressive like action to be a professional photographer. Like, you have to really promote, and it's not the easiest thing.
He has people who do that for him.
What? How do you balance that? Like, what's is this? Are we just seeing one side of you right now, the chill dude? Like, what's the other like? Who runs the business?
I generally run my business, and, you know, it's my brainchild. I just I love what I do, and you know, I try to let my photos speak for themselves sometimes, and just sometimes hope for the best.
Well, you're doing great. I just love it. Great work, and really a pleasure meeting you. TylerRomer.com.
Yes, great meeting you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Really inspiring. Beautiful stuff.
Really beautiful stuff.
So she made it to the bottom of that waterfall, okay?
Yeah. She pulled it off perfect.
Amazing. Just amazing. Thank you, Tyler. It's great to meet you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for being here. We love doing this show.
You get
to see such beautiful images and find out how people make these images. I hope you've seen all the episodes. They're 34 or 35 now.
We're getting up there.
You can find them all at twit.tv. So if you've missed any, don't miss one. Go back to twit.tv and watch them all.
I've watched them a couple times.
Yeah, they're worth really it. Good. I think whenever you need inspiration to go out there and shoot, every time I do this show, I either want to buy something or shoot something or both.
Usually both.
It's a very expensive show
to
watch.
And we should say Bob Martin obviously couldn't make it because he was sick.
We had mentioned he was going to be here.
But he will be on
another
reschedule.
Show. Good.
And then next week we have
Matthew Jordan Smith.
He's been requested many times.
Who is Matthew Jordan
Smith?
Matthew
Jordan Smith. He is a celebrity / fashion
portraits and legends.
He is amazing. The first time he did a, if you go to Epson's website, the Signature Series, they have a bunch of photographers that we've had on the show, Chase Jarvis, Art Wolf, and now Matthew Jordan Smith, doing videos about using Epson prints and products.
Can't wait. That's next week.
That's where I saw him first, and he's great.
We do this show every single Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. That's 2130 UTC, so you can watch live and be in the chat room. We love that when you do that. But if you miss a show, don't worry. They're all available, both in audio and video, so you can always listen in the car if you want. But it's good to get the video. Get the highest quality video. Soon we'll have HD video of these shows, and that's the ones you'll watch.
The only problem is it's hard to multitask and watch the show.
No, it's you got to sit down, put it on your big screen TV, go, and learn.
And another announcement, happy birthday, Leo.
Thank you. Did we pick yet our Twit Photo Guest Quest winner?
The Guest Quest is well underway. The judges have all the images right now.
All right.
So we're waiting. Waiting patiently.
We will know. We'll announce it soon.
We'll announce how many entries there were next week, but there was a lot
over
of
100.
Entries. Over 100. Well,
amazing.
Well over 100.
Wow.
And a lot of great stuff. So.
Yay.
Thanks,
I will not be here next week. We're going to be in Paris. Twit goes to Paris next week. We're covering Le Web.
I'm not going to Paris.
Well, some of us are, darling. But you have to be here to do the show.
The special people are going to Paris.
No, just it's Sarah and I and Tom. No, it's Sarah and I. That's it. We'll cover. We're going to interview. It's going to be early morning, though. I think it's going to be starting at 5 or 6 a.m. Pacific time. For 4 hours, we will interview people from Le Web. Amazing people. Lots of great people. It should be a lot of fun.
Great.
It's kind of early morning programming, but we will repeat it and make it available for download. So watch that next week as Twit goes to Paris. You can go next time. Actually, we got to plan a photo expedition
to
Rwanda.
You're quoted on this. This has been recorded.
I want to go to see the gorillas in the mist or something.
That's what I want.
We're going to do something fun. I promise.
Right.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for joining, Tyler.
Thank you, Catherine. CatherineHall.net to find her great images and to find out more about Catherine's work. And thank you for being here. We'll see you next time on Twit Photo.
All right. This is Twit Photo with Catherine.
I'm listening. Don't get distracted. You have to laser focus. Close your eyes if you have to. You can't be distracted.
Okay. I'm going to go like that, Leo. This is Twit Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte, episode number 35, recorded on November 29th, 2011. Tyler Romer.
The problem with doing that is it sounds like you're in a tin can.
So do that without doing that.
This is Twit Photo. Zen.
I was watching video of Ernie Anderson, who was the great announcer for many, many years. And he would do this with his hands. So maybe this would help you. He goes, "This episode of Twit Photo is brought to you by Ford."
This is Twit Photo, episode number 35, recorded on November 29th, 2011. Tyler Romer.
That helped a lot.
With the hands.
Because it gives it, it punches it. This is Twit Photo. That helped
a
lot.
Should I do it the whole show? I should be like, what aperture are you using?